Well, greetings everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily, worldwide, over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on another popular lie when we come back. You know, once in a while we get a glimpse of the real world through the eyes of an insider like John Swinton, for instance. Swinton was the guest of honor at a banquet given to him by the leaders of his craft, and someone who knew neither the press nor John Swinton offered a toast to the independent press. And Swinton outraged his colleagues by replying that there's no such thing at this date of world's history in 1880 in America as an independent press. Now, you know it and I know. And there's not one of you who dares to write your honest opinions, and if you did, you know beforehand that it would never appear in print. Now, I'm paid weekly for keeping my honest opinions out of the paper that I'm connected with, and others of you are paid similar salaries for similar things, and any of you who would be so foolish as to write your honest opinions would be out on the streets looking for another job. And if I allowed my honest opinions to appear in one issue of my paper, before 24 hours, my occupation would be gone. The business of journalists is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, to fawn at the feet of mammon, and to sell his country and his race for his daily bread. Now you know it and I know it. And what folly is this toasting of an independent press? We are the tools and vassals of rich men behind the scenes. We are the jumping jacks. They pull the strings and we dance. Our talents, our possibilities, and our lives are all the property of other men. We are intellectual prostitutes. Now, these rich men behind the scenes are the movers and shakers of this Global 2000 program and the New World Order. They're the men and families like the Windsors and Rockefellers and Bushes and Bundys and Carnegies and Vanderbilts. That's why I contend that it's time that we wise up and start listening more to the God of Abraham and stop following after all these crazy scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians, and let's prepare to live through and survive this New World Order and this Global 2000 insanity. Now, if you'd like to learn more about Global 2000, Bible prophecy, and this New World Order, why don't you call and order our free General Law CD package? That's the place to start. It's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. And you can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Just click on the email and send us an email request for that free General Law CD package. Now, once more, that's georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. I want you to do it right now while you're thinking about it before you forget. Another popular lie. How many of these popular lies are out there? Well, last time we took a look at the fair trial. That's a popular lie that we believe in from the time we're little children and we grow up believing in a fair trial. It's as phony as a $3 Federal Reserve note. And haven't we been taught from the time we're little children that you and I belong to the right church and everybody else is going to hell? And that voting cures all ills. Get out and vote. Exercise your franchise. Franchise? That's right. Voting is a franchise and a franchise is a privilege. So get out here and exercise your privilege. Whatever happened to rights? Yeah, your privilege, your franchise to vote. Doesn't make any difference who you vote for. As long as you get out there and vote, that's what we've been told. I pointed that out last time. I mean, hell, if voting would solve our problems today, we wouldn't have any problems to start with because we've been voting for 233 years. This idea of voting the bad guys out and voting the good guys in is as phony as a $3 Fed note. Hell, we don't even know who the good guys and the bad guys are. Do we? Send me an email and tell me who the bad guys are so I can vote them out next time, huh? Now, here's another one that comes up from time to time. And it was Moses was popular. Remember the movie, The Ten Commandments? Remember how popular Moses was? I mean, God, the people just loved him, didn't they? And they're just out there following after Moses. Moses was giving hell to the Pharaoh and leading through the Red Sea, and God, everything was just great. And that's the way Hollywood is. Hollywood portrays people, events, historical events, and so on, in a light that is actually diametrically the opposite to reality. So I thought I'd bring you back to reality here. There's a story in the Bible about Moses. I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but Moses was almost stoned three times by the people that he led out of Egypt. I mean, they hated his guts. Moses was about as popular as AIDS at an office Christmas party. Moses was less popular among the Israelites out in the wilderness than George Bush on the day he left office. Moses, in his 40-year career in leading the Israelites, had two out of 3.5 million people. Two people were his friends. Everybody else hated his guts. I know. I saw Cecil B. DeMille's movie, too, and I thought, my God, I'd like to be Moses so I could be so popular among all the people and listen to all those accolades. Huh? In Numbers chapter 16, there's a story. I thought I'd share with you the story and show you how popular Moses was. Now, Moses actually had three friends. He was the friend of God. Abraham was the friend of God, and Moses had a friend. It was God. But he had two human friends. It was, and I can tell you who they were. Their names were Joshua and Caleb. That's it. That's all the friends he had. Oh, he had a brother. I guess maybe he could call his brother his friend. He had a sister, Miriam. Maybe Miriam was his buddy. You could count Moses' friends on one hand. That's how popular he was. Well, anyway, one day there was a guy by the name of Korah. This is Numbers chapter 16. Now, Korah was a Democrat. See, Moses was a Republican, and Korah was a Democrat. And if you're wondering how I know that Moses was a Republican, you just wait until we read this story, and you're going to know just like I do that Moses was a Republican. He was a conservative Republican. He wasn't a Bush neocon. I mean, he was a straight-shooting a conservative here. Now, Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan, and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son, and On, and Oan was his name, and the son of Peleth, the sons of Reuben, took men. There's a bunch of guys out here, and they took men. And they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. I mean, they showed up with Dianne Feinstein, Barbara Boxer, Ted Kennedy. I mean, they had all the big guns from the Senate and House of Representatives. They might even had 2 or 3 members of the Supreme Court. And they came over to Moses and gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron. And they said unto them, you take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every man of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. Huh? How come you guys are taking so much power and authority upon yourselves, you damn Republicans? See? And so when Moses heard it, he fell upon his face. He was absolutely shocked. I mean, he was a dictator, all right, and he knew it. And he was shocked that these people would rise up seeking liberty and freedom. So he spoke unto Korah and unto all the company, saying, even tomorrow the Lord will show you who are his and who is not. Let me turn the page here and find out if I got that right. And who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him. Even him whom he has chosen will he cause to come near unto him. Now see, Korah and his 250 princes of Israel, they were thinking more in terms of democratic reforms. We need a change here. We need democratic reforms. You know, you Republicans and you neocons are taking too much upon yourselves. You turned into a bunch of damn dictators here. We want some change. So this do. You take you censers, Korah, and all of your company, and you put fire then, and you put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow, and it will be that the man whom the Lord does choose, he shall be holy. You take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. And Moses said unto Korah, hear, I pray you, you sons of Levi, seemeth it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Eternal and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them. Moses said, well, don't you think it's enough that you've been separated here to be in the civil service? Now, do you seek to take over the Congress? Do you seek to take over the presidency also? I mean, they had a pecking order there. They had an hierarchy. They had Moses and Aaron, and they had a tabernacle. But Korah wasn't satisfied with that. He said, hey, listen, you know, we think we ought to chair all the committees. We think we should be the majority party. We think we ought to be in here selecting the cabinet and directing the bureaucracy. So Moses went to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, we will not come up. And he says, is it a small thing that you have brought us up out of the land that flows with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness, except you make yourself altogether a prince over us? And so Dathan and Abiram, they actually called Moses a dictator. Hey, you know, you brought us up out of the land of milk and honey, Egypt, the land of milk and honey, and now do you seek to kill us here in the wilderness? Moreover, you have not brought us into a land that flows with milk and honey, or given us an inheritance of fields and vineyards. Will you put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. So Moses was really ticked off. Well, it doesn't say ticked off here, but it says in verse 15 that Moses was very wroth and said unto the Eternal, respect not their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, and neither have I hurt one of them. So Moses prayed to God, and he said, hey, listen, you know, these jerks over here are bringing up a false report against me. I haven't done these things that these people are complaining about. Now, Moses had probably done a few things. You know, I was talking to one of my students the other day, and he said, Mr. Gordon, do you know that these 7 men have brought up an evil report about you? And I said to him, I've done no evil to these 7 men. He said, well, they hate you. Well, you know, that goes with the territory. I'm not out here seeking some popularity contest. You know, I'm not sitting here trying to get you people to follow me. I just pointed out, like Moses said here, you know, I didn't cause these people any damage or any harm. Looking back on this, you know, Moses wasn't running for public office. He saw a bush burning up here on the hillside, and he said, that's a curious sight. I think I'll go up and look at that. He went up there and looked at it, and there was a guy there in the burning bush, and he said, hey, Moses, take your shoes off. You're standing on holy ground. He did, and he says, hey, I got a job for you. You look like you're unemployed here. I got some employment, and here's the pay schedule. You know, it's a non-union job, but, you know, for a guy that's unemployment, the unemployed, you know, something's better than nothing. So Moses took the job, and he went over to Pharaoh, and he said, hey, listen, I got a message. And he delivered the message, and Pharaoh, he was bummed out right away. He didn't care much for that message. And I've noticed the same thing here in the Scripture. The servants of God are never well received by the people. Oh, God, they hate them. They hate them. And that's what happened to Moses here. These people actually hated this guy. Well, you know, he said, hey, we're not coming up. You dictator, you think you're, you know, taking too much upon yourself. And so that's where the story is. So Moses said unto Korah, be thou and all of your company before the Lord, you and they and Aaron tomorrow, and take every man his censer and put incense in him and bring him before the Lord, every man his censer, 250 censers, you also and Aaron, each of you his censer. We're going to have an election tomorrow. And God, the Creator, is going to be the electorate. And he's going to come out and vote. And he can vote for me or he can vote for you. So they took every man his censer, and they put fire in him, and they laid incense thereon. They stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron, and Korah gathered all the congregation against them under the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. And so the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, he said, separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. Who? Did you hear that? Moses and Aaron are standing here at the door of the tabernacle, along with Korah and his 250 princes. And the whole congregation are met there against them. I mean, we got a mob here, 3.5 million people. That's a pretty good-sized mob. And they're all behind Korah and the 250 princes of Israel. They must have been out talking this up quite a bit. I mean, they probably had some campaign ads playing on TV and radio. Probably had some newspaper display ads out here, you know, lambasting this dictator Moses over here. And so God comes down there and he says, Moses, get the hell out of the road, and I'm going to consume all of these people. 3.5 million of them. I'm going to nuke them all. So in verse 22, and they fell upon their faces. This is Moses and Aaron. They fell on their faces and they said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be wroth with all of the congregation? And so the Eternal, this is God now, the Eternal spoke unto Moses, saying, you speak unto the congregation, saying, get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spake unto the congregation, saying, you depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all of their sins. So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side, and Dathan and Abiram came out. And they stood in the door of their tents, and their wives, and their sons, and their little children. And Moses said, hereby you shall know that the Eternal has sent me to do all of these works. Because if I have not done them of my own mind, if these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Eternal has not sent me. If these guys die of old age, God hasn't sent me. But if these guys die violently, then you'll know that the Creator has sent me. So we're going to have a test here. We're going to have a test. But here's my point. You know, the common lie is that Moses was just immensely popular with the Israelites. God, they just loved him. That's the picture you get from Cecil B. DeMille's The Ten Commandments. You got to have a hero, you know. You can't have some guy that's hated by everybody. The story flow doesn't flow right. Doesn't fit in with our concepts of religion and church, does it? Now, but if the Eternal, this is verse 39, says, but now, if the Eternal, God now, makes a new thing, and the earth opens up her mouth and swallows them up with all that appertain unto them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked God. So in verse 31, it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all of these words, that the ground clave asunder that was under them. The earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up. And not only did it swallow up these men, it swallowed up their houses and all the men that appertained unto Korah and all of their goods. I mean, their dogs, their cats, their tents, their cows, their pigs, their sheep, their wives, their children, little babies sucking on their mother's breasts. All fell down into the pit. And the ground closed up, killed them all. Woo! Ain't that something? Now, these people had been in Egypt, all 3.5 million of them. And all of them saw and witnessed these 10 plagues. They all left Egypt after having spoiled the Egyptians, went out into the wilderness and were trapped at the Red Sea. Actually, they were trapped at the Gulf of Aqaba, but that's another story for another day. And here they were about to be swallowed up by Pharaoh's army, and the Red Sea opens up. They walk through. They get over on the other side. The sea closes up and destroys Pharaoh's army. Now, you'd think people that had seen and actually witnessed something like that, you know, would have a little bit more on the ball than to be following after Korah and these ne'er-do-well Democrats. But you know, I'm just reading you the story. Hell, I'm just a reporter here. So here it is, and opened up, and swallowed them up. And they and all of their, they that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them. They perished from among the congregation. And all of Israel that was round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out a fire from the Eternal and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. All right, so here's a bolt of lightning comes down, kills the 250 guys with their incense, Abiram, Dathan, and his gang and all of their families. They go into a pit in the ground, and it swallows them up in an earthquake. The people, 3.5 million of them, are watching this. It scares the living hell out of them, so they split and leave the scene. And the story isn't over yet. And the Eternal spoke unto Moses, and he said, now you speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron the priest, that he take up the censers out of the burning, and scatter you the fire yonder, because they're hallowed. And the censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for a covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Eternal. Therefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel forever. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers wherewith they were burnt, and where they were burnt had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger which is not of the seed of Aaron come near to offer incense before the Eternal, that he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Eternal said to him by the hand of Moses. But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses. On the morrow, I mean, but the next day, the day after this event transpired, notice the word all, not most, not 90%, not 95%, all of the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, and they said, what? They said, you have killed the people of God. You have killed the servants of God. This is what the people said of Moses, as if Moses had the power to cause an earthquake or to bring fire down from heaven and consume 250. So, you know, there's an outcome that comes from this. Now, you know, people, religious people, they talk about Jesus and him crucified and sweet Jesus away in the manger and about the love of Jesus, you know. All right, well, here's Jesus, this guy here, this God right here, talking to Moses and working out here. This is the guy who became sweet Jesus, who was born of the Virgin Mary. Now listen up here. I'll tell you a story about sweet Jesus here. So on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, you've killed the people of the Eternal. And it came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses, underline that in your Bible, they were gathered against Moses. They hated his guts. So they gathered themselves against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Eternal appeared. God himself now appeared before all the congregation. They were gathered against Moses. They were going to kill him, and so here comes God out of the blue. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation, and the Eternal said to Moses, saying, get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment. And so Aaron and Moses fell on their faces, and Moses said unto Aaron, take a censer and put fire therein from off the altar, put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation and make an atonement for them, for there is wrath gone out from the Eternal, and the plague is begun. So Aaron took, as Moses commanded, and he ran into the midst of the congregation, and behold, the plague was begun among the people, and he put on incense, and he made an atonement for these people, 3.5 million of them. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. So Moses saved the people. You know, if it would have been me, just, you know, little Georgie Gordon, I would have said, right on, God, consume all of those sinners out there, and it's just me and you make a deal. That's because I'm a businessman. Moses was not a businessman. Moses was concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of the people. God love him. You know, if Moses would have had his head screwed on straight, he'd have made a lot of money. Fortunately for all of us living today, Moses went out there and interceded on our behalf, because if he hadn't, you and I wouldn't be alive today, because God would have killed them all, and therefore you would not have been born, and neither would I. So fortunately for all of us, Moses was a pretty good old boy, and he was a bad businessman, because if Moses had been a good businessman and a bad old boy, you and I wouldn't be around. Now here's the bottom line. He stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stayed. Now they that died in the plague were 14,700, beside them that died about the manner of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses, unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stayed. So if you thought that Moses was a very popular fellow among the Israelites, that's just another one of those popular lies that just taint so. It's about the halfway point, so I think I'll give you our mid-course reminder that you have been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective, not state schools and all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school. It is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults and compact desk, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. All of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the sources of information that we use in this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program. And we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we endorse are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications cited here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review, they may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and that their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine. They're mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management, or the staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. Now, if you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org, or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about another popular lie. In 40 years, Moses made two sales. He sent out 12 spies, if you remember, to spy out Jericho. And the 12 spies came back, and 2 spies had a good report, and 10 spies had a bad report. And as a result of that, those people were left in the wilderness for 40 years. 40 years. See, it doesn't take 40 years to walk from Egypt to Jerusalem. Palestine. Now, they were stuck out there for 40 years because of a popular lie, and that is that Moses was popular. They hated his guts. I showed you that. And in the entire process, if you want to know how many friends Moses had, he was a very lonely fellow because only 2 guys supported him in his program. That was Joshua and Caleb. Joshua took over after Moses died. Moses didn't make it into the Promised Land. He lived to be 120 years old. He interceded for our people 3 times. They wanted to stone him 3 times. He interceded 3 times. And each time he reminded God that he'd made a covenant or a contract with the people of Israel through Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And God 3 times said, well, yep, you're right. We got a contract here. We got a covenant. That's what a covenant is, a contract. Now, a contract has 4 elements to it. Contract. It's an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. God tendered an offer. The people accepted. The time is forever. And the consideration is the reciprocity on the contract. I'll give you these benefits if you'll obey my voice and keep my commandments. Our reciprocity, our liability, is that we practice the 10 commandments. Now, don't believe now for a minute that you've overpaid or that you're ahead on your payments. You haven't been performing on the 10 commandments. And that's what our problem is here in the United States and indeed around the world. Our problem is the non-performance on the contract, which now has triggered the penalty clause of Leviticus 26 and Deuteronomy 28. Doesn't have anything to do with religion, has to do with law. It has to do with a breach of contract and non-payment. Non-performance on the terms of the contract. That's what the bitch is all about. All right, let's change horses here, and then let me tell you a little story. The other day I was in Springfield, and my car isn't tracking just right. See, I noticed that one of the tires was wearing off on the inside, And right away, I looked at that and I said, you know, I think the front end needs to be real wide. And that was my take on it. And then I took it into the local Firestone store. God love them. And I said, hey, I got a tire wearing off on the inside, and I'd kind of like to have the front end aligned. And while we're at it, we should rotate the tires and balance the tires, because at 65 miles an hour, we get this vibration. I'm an old man, and I don't like to be vibrated. And so the man said, well, when would you like to bring it in? And I said, well, what's wrong with right now? And he said, I'm busy. I said, oh, business must be pretty good. It was. The depression has not struck the Firestone store in the Battlefield Mall. Those guys are busy as beavers in a flood. So I made an appointment the next morning for 7:30 a.m. I said, I'll be here bright and early. And he said, right on. So I brought my car in and said, well, came in yesterday. Remember me? Hey, remember me? Here's your card. 7:30, here's our appointment. Align the front end, balance the tires, and rotate. And I said, now, about how long is that going to take? And he said, an hour and a half. And I said, that's terrific. Because while you're doing that, I'm going to walk over here to the mall. I'm going to sit down, have breakfast, read the newspaper. I'll see you in an hour and a half. Went over, sat down, drank coffee, ate chocolate chip cookies, had breakfast. Chocolate chip cookies and coffee sounded pretty good to me. And there I am having my breakfast and reading the paper and finding out what's going on in the world. And pretty soon I said, well, it's time for me to go back and take a look at my car. So I went back, and there was my car. It was up on the rack, and there were the tires laying on the floor. And I thought to myself, no, an hour and a half has gone by, and they haven't got my car fixed. So I went up to the counter, and the guy said, oh, my God, Mr. Gordon, good thing you came back. He said, boy, do we have a problem. So I grabbed my ass, hung on tight. I could see what was coming. So we went out there, and he pointed out those four tires laying on the floor, and he said, here's what your problem is. Your tires are wore out, and you need new tires. And look at how out of balance they are, and look at this, and look at that. And then he said, look, in the front end, to align this front end, you're going to have a new gearbox, and you got to have tie rod ends, and you got to have idler screws, and whatchamathingies over here, and it's going to cost you $2,160 to get this thing fixed correctly. Boys and girls, all I thought I needed was to have the front end aligned, because one tire was wearing off on the inside, and all of a sudden, I'm informed that I need $2,160 worth of new tires, gearboxes, thingamajiggies, and alignment screws, and my God. And I said to the man, well, that's all well and good. So I looked at them four tires. Now, I know I used to be a young man. And when I was a young man, I never had tires that good. I don't think I had a tire as good as those four tires laying on the floor there until I was about 50 or 60 years old. See, I used to run on skins. I used to buy used tires that other people, you know, old men had cast off and put those on my car to run them, because these old men, you know, the old men are kind of funny. I got to tell you about old men. See, old men know that they're going to die. Young men have eternal life. Young men can run on skins. Old men have to run on new tires. Now, I just bought them tires not too long ago. Now, it is true, they ain't brand new no more, and they do have some wear on them. I ain't lying to you there, but let me tell you, there's lots of tread left on them tires. And when that kid said to me that my problem is I need new tires, I couldn't contain myself. I'm a salesman, too. And I said, well, how much are these new tires going to cost? And he said, well, $123 a piece. Well, plus balancing, you know, plus mounting, plus sales tax. So I said, yes, about $150 each. That's $600 I can count. Couldn't count until I was 37, but I could count that up. And I said, now tell me about this alignment problem you're having over here. He said, well, you know these Chevrolets. Well, yeah, I kind of know a little something about Chevrolets. I've been around here in the United States for a long time. Chevrolet, for the rest of you people out there, is the number one brand name of automobile in the United States. Number one brand name, Chevrolet. You know, Ford's right up there, and Dodge, and Plymouth, and Chrysler. I mean, there's other names out there, but Chevrolet's number one, as far as I know. Been that way for as long as I can remember. And he said, well, you know, these Chevrolets, you know, they've had problems for years, and then they don't turn out very good product, and so on. So I said, okay. And he said, well, now, to do this job right, you got to have a new gearbox. How much is that? It was $523. And then you got to have these tie rods, and got to have these thingies, and those thingies, and one thing and another. So I said, well, instead of fixing this thing right, why don't we just fix this thing wrong? And let's start with, let's align the front end. Let's turn some screws and nuts and bolts and align the front end. And he said, now we can do that, but if we do, it ain't going to hold. And I said, well, okay, now why don't you just go ahead and align the front end for the $79 quoted yesterday, and then it won't hold, and it'll go out of alignment again. And then we'll come in and we'll realign it. And then we'll test that a couple, three times, Maybe you're right. You know, maybe it won't hold. But you know, we can align that thing 2 or 3 times, and what if it does hold? You know, what if I don't need to spend $2,100 here? You know, have you ever thought of that? See, salesmen working for Firestone, they don't think about these tires might last for another 10,000 miles, and maybe that front end alignment might hold, and maybe this guy doesn't need to spend $2,100. See, and so this is the battle between the salesman and the consumer. See, now I'm an old timey salesman. In fact, I train salespeople. I understand vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. You know, and I can count now. And I could count $2,150. And so the guy says, now, do you want the $150 alignment or the $79 alignment? I said, explain to me the difference. He says, well, here's what happens. For $79, we will align your front end one time. But for $150, we will align your front end as often as it needs it. Now, don't you think you should have the $150 alignment, because as bad as your front end is, and you can bring your car in and we will align your front end every time it goes out for as long as you own the car. And I thought to myself, my God, that is a good sales pitch. That is a wonderful sales pitch. You tell the guy that his front end is totally trashed, and that if we align it, it'll never hold, and that you need to spend $2,150 to fix it. To fix it right. I thought about just fixing it temporary, or fixing it wrong, or fixing it hocus pocus or something for something less than $2,150, but he wanted to fix it right. So look, the difference between $80 and $150, you know, is another $70. So if I would pay double now, it's kind of like blackjack, you know. Hey, you turn up a pair of aces and you double down. One card, double down. Well, you can split. I felt like a gambler. Should I gamble here on the front end going out again? So I said to the young man, I said, sir, I'm an old man, 70 years old, and in my lifetime I have only had 2 front ends aligned. I've been driving for 50 years, son, and I've only aligned 2 front ends. I did it to my 1947 Plymouth 4-door pink sedan, and I'm doing it to this car here. This is the second time in 50 years. This car has 179,000 miles on. Son, I ain't sure this thing's going to last long enough for the front end to go out one more time. So I think I'll just take the $79 special and take my chances. So he frowned and then looked at me like I was suffering from the terminal stupids, and then said, ah, but I got you now. What are you going to do about these 4 tires? And I said, that's why I brought them to you. I want you to put them on your balancing machine over there and put 16 pounds of weight on the other side of that wheel over there, so that it'll balance out with the 16 pounds of too much rubber that's on the other side over there, and get them somewhere balanced out. And the guy said, well, that'll never work. So, you know, I've had tires balanced more than once, and you know, I had it done 2 or 3 times over the last 50 years, and it seemed to work in the past, and this guy's telling me, well, it ain't going to work now. Well, I didn't really want to argue with him. I thought, well, maybe I ought to just put the tires back on and go across the street to the Goodyear store. But then I got to thinking, you know, the last time I was at the Goodyear store, I went out for breakfast and came back, and my 4 tires were laying on the floor, and the guy came over to me and said, oh, my God, what are you going to do about this? So it doesn't make any difference whether you go to Goodrich or Goodstone or Firestone or Bridge Right and Bridge Left or Firestone or Fire Rocket. What the hell difference does it make? They all got the same sales pitch. You bring your car in. They take the tires off, lay them on the floor, you come back, and they tell you, the end of the world is here, you need a new car. I came in here to spend $100 to have the front end aligned and the tires balanced, and it's going to cost me $2,100 to get out of here. Well, I said, okay, tell you what I'd like you to do. I'd like you to do the best you know how. Son, I want you to put that tire right there on your balancing machine, and I want you to spin it around, and I want you to find out how much weight you need to put on it, and I want you to get after it, and I want you to balance some tires. You know, they don't have to be perfect. Just do the best you can. And so he did. Cost me $127. $127. And I got them put on my car, and I drove out. God, it just runs like a top. Of course, the front end's going to go out any day now. And it's going to cost me $2,150 to get the job done right. But I thought I would tell you about this popular lie. And the popular lie is, when you go into your Midas dealer, and you say to him, would you please check my brakes and the brake fluid, and tell me what condition they're in, he'll take the 4 tires off, lay them on the floor, and say, oh my God, lady, it's fortunate for you that you drove in here today, because had you driven another mile or two, probably disaster would have overtaken you, and all of your children would now be dead or in the hospital on life support from the accident that you were going to have when your brakes failed. And then he sells you a brake job. And of course, you got to have new brakes and new rotors, and you got to have the thingies turned and all of this good stuff in here. I mean, we couldn't just put on new brake pads. See, when I was a kid, you used to take your car in, and they'd put new brake shoes on for you, and they cost you about $14.95, and they'd charge you about $20 to put it on, so about $39.95, and you'd have new brake jobs in. and then you're good for another, you know, 50,000 miles or so or whatever. Not now. Oh my God, not anymore. Boy, you come in there now, and if you can get out of there for less than $2,000, you know, this is a good day. This is a sale. This is a special. Now, the big lie is, and you can't blame the guy. I told him, I said, let me grade you here, son. I train salesmen, and I'm going to give you a B+ for your sales pitch. You did a good job, but I'll tell you where you screwed up. You screwed up here because you told me in an hour and a half you'd have my car ready. I came back in an hour and a half. Now, you can tell I'm on a schedule. That's why I made an appointment. And I've got things I need to do. And I want to get the hell out of here and get to doing them, and I ain't going to get out of here for another hour. That means that you're costing me an hour. That's why you got a B+ instead of an A. You didn't get me out of here on time. But secondly, your sales pitch is really good, and I give you an A for that, because most people, when you confront them with the four tires laying on the floor, are probably going to buy into your program over here and pay you the $2,000 to have all this work done. Now, of course, he's not going to have the steering box and these parts. You'll have to order those, and you'll have to make another appointment. But he's going to make the sale today. He's going to sign you up today. And I said, that's really good. But I said, son, this car's got 179,000 miles on it, and I don't think that this car is worth $2,100. That's point number one. Because one of these days it's going to quit, and when it does, I'm going to take it down into the woods, and I'm going to park it like I parked the last one and the one before that and the one before that. I had a guy here the other day, he's a mechanic. He said, what's wrong with that pickup over there? And I said, nothing. It was running the day I shut it off 13 years ago. He pointed to another one. He said, what's wrong with that car over there? I said, nothing. That car was running when I shut it off 23 years ago. And he said, what about that one over there? I said, that pickup's fine, nothing wrong with it. I said, that pickup was running when I parked it over there 6 years ago. See, when the thing finally gives out on me, hell, it's still running. I just drive it down there and park it, and then I go get another one. That's what I'm going to do with this one. When this one quits, I'll just drive it down to the boneyard and park it. So I don't think I want to spend $2,100 on a $1,500 car. I just don't see the future in that. That's kind of like you people out there having these $300,000 homes that are worth $200,000, and you're making your payments, and some of you are starting to wake up and walk away from them, let the bank have it. Had a lady call me last night, and she said that. She said, hey, I'm moving out of my house. I said, what happened? She said, I got evicted, foreclosed on me. I said, boy, was that your lucky day. You should mark that down on your calendar. That's the best thing that ever happened to you. And she said, you know, I'm starting to think that's probably true. She said, I've been making $2,300 a month payments, and I'm moving into a $700 a month apartment. Single lady. What in the hell does a single lady need with a $2,100 a month payment? She's going to put $1,400 a month more in her pocket and live better next month than she did last month. I just thought I'd point that out for you. Just, you know, most of you people probably can't count. You won't be able to count as long as you're practicing communism. I was a practicing communist until I was 37. Then I learned how to count. Hey, I'd been the same since. Now let me tell you about the red light camera. I got about 5 minutes here on me. Let me tell you about this. Remember I told you I was in Springfield the other day. I was driving down Glenstone, and I noticed there was a sign that said, Respect Red. Respect Red fines $100 for running red lights. And I remembered that. We have cameras now in Springfield. We've got the all-seeing eye. And when you're driving up to the red light, if the light turns yellow, you know, here you are, you're traveling down the street at 40 miles an hour. That's the speed limit, 40. And you're traveling 40 miles an hour. And they don't want you to run these red lights. And so you're 36 feet from the corner, traveling 40 miles an hour, and the light turns from green to yellow. You slam on the brakes, get into the middle of the intersection, and then you back up 30 feet. Is that the new format now? Well, yeah, that's so that you can avoid running the red light. See, in the past, you know, up until just recently, we used to drive down the street, and we were watching this green light. And then when the light turned yellow, you had to make a decision. You know, should I step on the gas and then get through the intersection, or should I slam on the brakes and let this guy behind me hit me in the hind end? Now, if you get caught, if the front of your bumper is 1 inch in front of the white line, the crosswalk line, when that thing turns red, it'll take a picture of your car. Then they'll send you a ticket in the mail for $100. And they said, we're just real concerned about the health, safety, and welfare of the people. And we just want to protect you from getting killed by these red light runners. And I thought to myself, now, where have I heard that story before? Health, safety, and welfare of the people. So anyway, I was stopped at a red light, and so I was looking up at my red light, looking straight ahead, and I could look off to my left, and I could see the red light in the other direction. Now, here's what I noticed. When the light turns red on sunshine, see, I'm already stopped at the red light. When the light turns red for the traffic on sunshine, the light does not turn green for me on Glenstone for 2 seconds. I measured it. I timed it. 2 seconds. There's a 2 second delay wherein the lights are red in both directions. I think somebody figured that out so that the guys that are running through these yellow lights over here have plenty of time to clear the intersection. How long does it take you to go through the intersection at Sunshine and Glenstone at 40 miles an hour? I don't know, but it ain't a second. You know, 1 second, 40 miles an hour, you're through. And boys and girls, they're not taking pictures and giving people tickets for running red lights because anybody has ever been killed, threatened to be killed, injured, or involved in a car wreck by going through the yellow light when it turned red. That has never happened in the history of the world. It is not happening today, and it ain't never going to happen if we live to be 110 years old. That's just another popular lie, which the truth of the matter is, what we're really looking for here is $100 fines, which is a revenue-generating device to put money in the city coffers. We would like to just raise your taxes. And so they did. They put cameras up out there, and they said, I can take your picture. Now, the other day, there was a story on the news that while red light runners have now been reduced by 50%, rear-end collisions have now gone up by 500%. You got five times more rear-end collisions from people slamming on their brakes and skidding into the middle of the intersection and backing up 30 feet than you had before. Nobody ever had an accident running through the yellow light when it turned red. All right, let's try it. You're driving down the road at 40 miles an hour. 36 feet from the intersection, the light turns yellow. And you drive right on through because the yellow light stays on for 5 seconds. Let's try it this way. You're 300 feet from the intersection and the light turns yellow. You can slam on the brakes, but instead you step on the gas. And right at the intersection, the light turns red. But now you're traveling at 40 miles an hour and you drive through on red. So what? The light is delayed for a full 2 seconds anyway. Come on, guys, let's wake up and smell the coffee here, shall we? When they tell you that they're taking pictures of you because you're running red lights, what they're really doing is generating $100 fines for somebody else's retirement fund. That's just another popular lie, but I thought I'd expose it. All right, I'm out of time, so let me remind you that you have been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, and we're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on a compact disc. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. And the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.